Blog Talk Radio.
Our Common Ground.
Blog Talk Radio.
I'm Janice Grant.
Welcome to Our Common Ground. Thank you so much for joining us on this Saturday, November 13th. I'm Janice Graham, and my co-host, Alpho, is with me tonight. And we certainly welcome you. If you are listening and you have not come to our chat and discussion site, you can do so by coming to blogtalkradio.com/OCG. Good evening, Alpho. Thank you for joining me again tonight on Our Common Ground.
Well, good evening, Janice. It's a pleasure to be here.
And how are you, sir, tonight?
Well, I'm doing a little better than I was this afternoon. I've had an opportunity to kind of calm down and look at it for what it really is. Either he does.
Which one are you looking at, Alpho?
Either he does or either he don't.
So you think the president is where we ought to have our eye?
Well, I just think that they are not responsive to the dangers. I mean, I think the Republicans have a full-blown playbook already set up. They've already got their game plan, and they know it's going to work. So, I quit getting riled up about it.
You know, if you look at a headline from today, let's just take one of them. This is a headline in mainstream media. Secret documents show CIA gave ex-Nazi safe haven. Are we surprised?
No.
Okay. Okay, let's go to another one. New poll delivers bad news for Palin. Are we surprised?
No.
Okay. We're going to try to find a headline that surprises you. Cindy McCain recants her support of Don't Ask, Don't Tell repeal.
She cancels her support of Don't Ask, Don't Tell
repeal.
So now she's all for
it. So now she's in favor of it.
Okay. Because I saw that earlier that, it looked like she was dragging McCain to a pro-gay event, and he wasn't happy about it.
Are we surprised?
Not really.
Okay. No, we're not surprised. Key Republican denies climate change on religious grounds. Are we surprised?
No, not surprised at that one. He spoke the passages out of a Bible about God promising. You know, these are the people who profess to talk to God personally. And this is what they advocate. And these are the headlines. They get these headlines.
Well, you know, it would be easy for us tonight to have a clip of Rush Limbaugh being Rush Limbaugh, the racist imperial wizard that he is. But, you know, I'm tired of fighting back at the lunatics that have taken over the front pages of our newspapers. I mean, all these people, you know, the lawyers can't figure out how to make Joe Miller win in Alaska, so they all packed up their bags and went home. You know, the tea bagger party is still being the lunatic fringe, and they're still getting front page coverage. How did that happen?
I think it's all a part of the process. It's all a part of the plan. If you can inundate the public with this carnival, I mean, that's what it is. It resembles a carnival. You know, you got a three-ring circus here, and it's just full of clowns. And they get all the headlines, and they get all the attention, while all of the important things that should be discussed and the important things that should be discussed in our community simply fall by the wayside.
Yeah, like George W. Bush's memoirs. You know, we all know that he didn't write this book. He can't write a paragraph, let alone a whole book.
Well, think about it. Neither can Palin. And there's quite a few of them who can't. Do you think Scott Brown isn't eligible or ascends to that level where he can be a thinker, a real politician?
Well, no, I don't.
No, you don't.
He's as deep as a teaspoon of Alka-Seltzer.
Mm-hmm.
How does that get you? So, to you, what was the most important headline of the day, of the week?
Of the week?
Yeah.
That's kind of difficult. I would have to give that thought, because there are always so many that, to me, it seems to be how do you prioritize them? How do I put them in order, in an order where one it takes takes top billing over another? I think I saw an article in Think Progress about the planning of their next move. This senator that was just elected, Mike Lee, and they're constantly gathering, and they're constantly in these retreats and these lobbyists. I think one of the most important headlines of the week comes out of the fact that these people are still meeting and strategizing, but the Democrats never do that. I just saw where Bernie Sanders is calling for a gathering of progressives. You mean to tell me you've got to go out publicly and call for a gathering to plot a strategy to fight back, to react? They're not proactive, they're reactive. And that's their biggest downfall.
Mm-hmm.
And they can all get together and they still will come out with some limp, impudent plan to push back. And that's I think those are the kind of headlines that, you know, I expect the others. You know, I don't give them much time as far as, you know, or worry. But when you see and you know that they're strategizing, that they're making that they're conspiring, and that's what they do. That's what the Republicans did on the health care bill, just before they passed it. They knew they couldn't stop it, so they met with the Chamber of Commerce and all the businessmen, and they plotted how they were going to take it down, you know, and the health insurers, and how they were going to keep it down with the lobbyists. And one of the biggest headlines I see is, who will stand up for the rich? Who will stand up to the rich? Because right now, everybody seems to get run over who stand and, you know, in dissent to them. And they run over them with the money and the power. So
So who can stand up to the rich? But each and every one of our individual votes cast together, and we can't get that because we can't seem to come together. We can't seem to have a singular strategy.
Well, Frank Rich, in the opinion pages of the New York Times, is asking the same question. On today, he published a piece, and it was entitled, Who Will Stand Up to the Super Rich? And one of the things he said, to my mind, these losers deserve a salute. They all had run businesses that actually created jobs. They all wanted to enter public service to give back to the country that allowed them to prosper. And by losing so decisively, they gave us a ray of hope in dark times. Their defeats reminded us that despite much recent evidence to the contrary, the inmates don't always end up running the asylum of American politics. And the people that he is talking about, and that's close quote, he's talking about, people like Meg Whitman, John Race, Linda McMahon. But then he talks about how much service they really wanted to render, which is interesting. You know, and he evidences their empirical empires. So and then talks about the GOP's argument for extending the Bush tax cuts to the crowd of friends that empowered them in the first place. But that doesn't, I really enjoy reading Rich. He goes on to say that many of the countless tasks that need to be addressed to start rebuilding an equitable America are formidable, but surely few, if any, are easier than eliminating a tax break. He makes sense, but it doesn't seem that people are actually following him. But those are the kinds of, that's an unusual kind of headliner. What we most see is Jennifer Love Hewitt and her boyfriend and McDonald's Pepsi to help write UK health policy and two Maryland local state politicians, a politician and his wife, with $80,000 in her bra, and by the way, they are both black, stories that are empty. And that's what the American public has to rely upon. But, Alpha, the one story that I saw this week appeared in the New York Times, and it was just so disturbing. Tonight I'm asking the question, how can we save ourselves? And that story was written by Tripp Gabriel, and I read Tripp a lot. And it talks to and speaks to the proficiency of black students being found to be far lower than even expected. It says that 12% of black fourth grade boys are proficient in reading compared with 38% of white boys. And only 12% of black eighth grade boys are proficient in math compared with 44% of white boys. And in this report, it says that poverty alone does not seem to explain the differences. Poor white boys do just as well as African American boys who do not live in poverty, measured by whether they qualify for subsidized school lunches. That is a disturbing headliner. That is a headliner that we should be aware of. We should be incensed. But everybody, and I'm not saying everybody, most people are talking more about For Gullah Girls and Tyler Perry than they're talking about this report. And I don't understand that.
Well, because
that's like people coming out to see the movie Colored Girls as compared to going to see a movie of on education or a documentary on education and the disparaged education of African Americans as compared to the rest of the cultures in our country. They're going to go see the one that's more entertaining, the one that has put out the advertising and promoted that movie. So it basically, they're going to the ones who advertise, and that just shows me how strong the advertising is. That advertising is for what you want to sell, what you want to push to a nation. And we as consumers, and you can call it what you want, but the average person that is working is in that rut. They are so involved in day to day the same Groundhog Day grind, and they do it over and over again, and the education of the children is not a top priority. And as you see, as you say, and as you've seen, PTA meetings are not attended. And most of the parents don't even attend, the sporting events from, the African-American youth, simply because they take that stance of, I'm too busy, or it's time for me to rest. I'm tired. They don't.
Mm-hmm. But, in the study, it also suggests that aside from poverty, that one of the things is that we do have to address what people do at home with their children. But it seems to be an issue of mostly, according to the study, mostly teaching, how we teach. And we've known that. I mean, this is no new news. You're listening to Our Common Ground at Blog Talk Radio. I'm Janice Graham, and my co-host is Alpho. We thank you for being with us, and hope that you will join in this discussion at 347-838-9852. We're talking about Up from the Bottom, Black Crisis in America. How do we save ourselves from ourselves? And how many studies does it take to prove that there is a crisis, a political crisis, an economic crisis, an educational crisis, a social crisis?
Personality and culture as instruments of power. Because ultimately, this is what this whole struggle is about. Power. Not loving one another and all those things we hear. Power. And to a great extent, the problems that we are confronted with today as African people and African people in America flows from our powerlessness or our inappropriate use of power.
Right.
We've been made to even talk about it. We've been made to think that power is sinful and that to pursue it is a sinful pursuit.
All right. That's right.
And that it's wrong. But you cannot exist without power. Without power, there is no life. A battery without power is dead.
All right.
You need power to act, to behave in the world, to deal with the world. And consequently then, we must interpret what we are about in terms of power. And we have the power, ladies and gentlemen. We have the possibilities. We just need to reorganize ourselves, reorganize our consciousness and our personality and our culture and see them as instruments of power and use them as instruments of power to transform our situation. So we should not look at consciousness as some abstraction. As I often tell people, the most practical thing you can have is a good theory, is a good concept to guide your behavior, to be used as an instrument to measure reality, as an instrument to test reality. A good theory then organizes the world and organizes one's approach to the world. It permits one to be able to evaluate the world in terms of where one wants to go and in terms of what one wants to do. To be without theory then is to approach the world on an ad hoc basis, you know, just to meet it here and there and to not approach it in a systematic form. To live reactionarily, always reacting to what other people are doing. Always being overwhelmed by events and overwhelmed by the future instead of creating events and creating the future and making the future.
All right.
See, when one has then a good theory and a good concept, one is able to do that.
This is Our Common Ground. I'm Janice Graham, speaking truth to power and ourselves at Our Common Ground. Transforming truth to power, one broadcast at a time. Thank you for being with us tonight.
Alpha, I think in that clip what it tells us is that we really don't take seriously our ability to define our priorities, to believe that we have the power through our own consciousness about what the problems are. And so tonight, for our listeners, I really want to hear, what do you think are the problems, and how do we save ourselves from these continuing, deepening crises? Alpha, we've got a caller, and you think we ought to go to our phones?
Why not?
I
have a clue as to who this could be.
314, you're on the air. I respect you. Thank you for joining us on Our Common Ground.
How y'all tonight?
Good evening.
Good, thank you. How are you? Where are you calling from?
Pretty good. I'm calling from Midwest. You know, I'm the field director for African Center Curriculum for the St. Louis chapter of the National Black United Front. And this issue,
he's breaking up real bad. I can only hear
every
word.
You're breaking up really bad. Are you on a cell phone?
No, that should be better there. Is that better?
Okay, great. We did.
Yeah.
We could hardly hear what you were saying.
I said I'm calling here from the Midwest. And we are the field director for African Center Curriculum for the St. Louis chapter of the National Black United Front. And this
welcome, Harambe.
This thing on education, we've been working with for quite some time.
I know.
And when we go to the schools and try to address the problem, like we have been doing for many, many years, and the people don't want to hear it. They run us out.
When you say the people, who are the people? You mean the community?
The administrators, the boards, and the system. They run us out like y'all just ran me out of your chat room.
I'm sorry. I touched the wrong button. I didn't mean
let me
do
tell
that.
You. See, the problem is that black people have all the things that they necessarily need in order to turn their situation around. But
I
for
absolutely
some reason,
agree with you, Piansky. How am I going to get you back in the chat room?
For some reason, they won't do it. And these public schools, I mean, the community should be brought up on child abuse. You can't blame the parents because there's no mechanism. Well, you can't blame the parents entirely because there's no mechanism in our community even to teach a child how to become a parent. And the children are being used as a commodity, just like sugar, wheat, rice, not only in the public schools but also in the prison systems. But we have working models of schools that are doing the right thing. They just don't have a economic element to them. Your Council of Independent Black Institutions, you have some African-centered charter schools, you know, like your Malcolm X and your Paul Robeson in Detroit and so on. And so your Marcus Garvey in Los Angeles there in South Central, excellent school. But black people just won't support these institutions.
Mm-hmm.
And for what
mm-hmm.
reason,
now
I
let's
just
talk
don't know.
About that for a minute. One of the problems that I've identified and that I talk a lot about is the idea that we have parents, just as you said, we have parents who simply don't have the skills for parenting nor the capacity, because the parents of kids who are in public school right now, number one, they are parents who were miseducated themselves.
That's true.
So
not only if you have bad,
go ahead.
You have terrible leadership. You have the pseudo leadership that has led us down in the wrong direction. You know, one example was the busing, and it's just totally ridiculous the things that you see that's going on.
So, what, given your experience, and I'm very, very familiar with the United Black Front, given your experience, how do we start from now? You know, I think that we came out of the civil rights movement and the black power movement and the black liberation movement with some excellent notions of the how we transform our communities, but we never really did anything that was global in nature. So we have a whole generation of parents who don't have an appreciation for how political action and community activism can change things for them and their children. I mean, we've got a lot of, I mean, if you look at the statistics, Pianki, we have a lot of parents who have no notion of the situation under which black children are educated or live. We're almost like accepting. And that's why I'm saying tonight, how do we help ourselves? How do we save ourselves?
You know, our biggest problem, which continues to be so today and have been for a very long time, is with blacks in America, is the economic problem. And we continue to buck dance and jive around that root issue and don't want to attend to it as it should be. Now, you have many black nationalists who have done great things with what they have to work with. But until we address that economic problem that we have in our community, no schools like we're talking about that needs to be is not going to ever work, because you don't have the means to support them. Amos Wilson himself said that a politician is no stronger than the people he represents.
Absolutely.
And the people
and Malcolm
that
said
he
in a different way.
Yeah, the people that he's representing is not economically strong. Then where is his support coming from? Your teachers union is some of the most vile and vicious entities that has done all sorts of things against movements that was put forth in order to change the situations of black children in schools. Look at the incident that went on in Milwaukee. You look at the incidents that went on in Detroit. You got black teachers who's also a member of these organizations, who's paying into these unions. And these unions at a local level is paying into a national union, which in turn takes the money and fund your black caucuses both at a federal and a state level. You got the NAACP, which is doing the same thing. They threaten your politicians that if they go along with the ability for parents to have the choice of what type of environment that their children are educated in, then they will attack them.
So do we go back to the go ahead, Alpha.
I do. I'm listening to this, and you've cited the lack of funding, the lack of economic support. So when you speak about we know about the problems with the political funding and the political aspect and how that game is played. And if we can stipulate to the fact that these are children of, and their parents were children of the same system, so they are really at a shortfall when it comes to being a parent. So at some point, without the parental guidance, without the first teacher at home being inadequate, how does that carry over into a educational system that is also inadequate but is not proficient or will never be proficient in the basics such as discipline and attention span and that whole, you know, that whole nine yards when it comes to preparing that child for school or making sure there's the discipline there that makes education a top priority, and it's just not in our community. And it's not that it's, you know, the teachers' union's fault. It's not that it's the teachers' fault. The teachers will teach what they are being pushed to teach. So the teachers aren't teaching what the proper curriculum. The students aren't there to learn. They are there for a fashion show, for a social gathering. So how many studies is it going to take for us to realize that there is the crisis?
Well,
and I don't foresee it as being a teachers or a unions crisis because they are trapped in the same type of a system where at some point in time you have to say, hey, wait a minute, this is not going anywhere. This is not going to do any. This is not going to do me any good as an individual. If you are a teacher, what will motivate you to go against the grain?
Well, I can tell you exactly what motivates them. At 11:30 every morning, a child is counted in that seat in that building to get paid from the state. That's what motivates them. And it has been that way. The teachers' union have fought every movement that black parents have came forth with to change the system that their children are in. There was books written about them. One book was entitled Not Yet Free at Last. Eloquently talks about how the teachers fought against what was trying to be done in Milwaukee. There's another book, Educating Black Boys, which was authored by Clifford Watson, which talks about how black parents came out in sub-zero weather in Detroit, Michigan, and how they tried to implement, which would eventually come into being Malcolm X Academy. You remember, you seen on 60 Minutes how the children was bussed into Oakland and how the whites would stand on the side of the road and throw rocks at the buses because they was trying to get their children to a building that was not being used. But you got, and here in Missouri, with the charter school law, when you have grassroots organizations try to start charters, and they mimic already successful curriculums. And by the way, a curriculum is whatever the local concern wants it to be, just so long as it meets state minimum standards, which are watered-down standards. So when you have the state board of education, which the group has to go to court to get the state board of education to tell them what's wrong with their charter application, and the state board comes back and say, well, this is what's wrong, which is no more than crossing T's and dotting I's. And once that's done, they come out and say, well, we still not going to give you a charter. And then when they try to change the law where it reads that a charter plan cannot duplicate an already successful plan nor create a school of isolation, well, that's politics working there. Who would come out and say that they're going to have it in the law where if you're going to have a charter school, and it doesn't make sense to reinvent the wheel. So if you got something that's working very well, especially for the same socioeconomic students that you have in your own community, if you got something working well, why not build off of that? But they say you cannot do that. So when you not say that's politics working against you?
Well, of course it's politics, and that is one of my pet peeves, because politics will enter into your lives and affect everyone's lives more than people really realize. And that's exactly what's happening, is as you articulate. Parents can stand up, parents can do this, but the politics will come into play. And as we have these types of politics that are being basically crafted, dictated by the rich and by the haves, who has the power to fund it, we're going to be in the same situation.
But that's not entirely true, because it was a wealthy person who funded these efforts, whether it's Bayo, or whether it's many of your voucher initiative. You got rich people who's putting forth money in order for these things to happen. People like myself, and probably you don't have the funds in order to mount those type of campaigns.
The rich people who have funded these ventures, they don't have the political clout.
Let's
talk about getting it real here. All of those things are going to go on regardless of what we do. But one of the reasons that I played the clip about consciousness and personality and power from Dr. Amos Wilson was to make the point that at some point we have to take over. I think that we've got to stop putting so much priority on what other people are doing and really look at what we are doing. It is clear that we have to have, and this is from what you have said, Bianchi, is that we've got to have community education. We've got to set up an infrastructure within our community to begin to address the issues of the lack of consciousness, the lack of clarity about education in both parents and students. You know, they have all these wonderful things.
Black people don't need any more consciousness. What black people need in America is money. The first thing, if the three of us was to go out and start a society, the first element of that society that we put in place is the economy. Without the economy, you can't have politicians, because you don't have no way to fund them. Without the economy, you can't have a police force, because you don't have any way to pay them. Without the economy, you can't have education is the last thing that you put in place. As I said before, we have the talent. We have examples that have been tried, true, and tested. But the problem is with the funding. That was one of the reasons why company went to the voucher program. That way black parents could take their children and put them in these excellent schools and be able to pay for them. But when you're dependent on the government, see, one another thing that hurts black schools is that black schools in your urban area receive a lot of money from the state and the federal government. When you compare that to a suburban school that's doing well, they receive hardly no money at all from the state government and nothing from the federal government. That's why the state and federal can't tell them what to do.
And how's that working for us?
How's what working for you?
Developing political power to
because if you have a public school and you want to go ahead and put a program in, like for instance, I try to put in our schools, my school district, in the high school, because we have a problem with fire departments. You have them in your city too. They don't hire black people, and they put up these barriers, like they have these prerequisites, like you got to have an EMT certification. Well, for a child to graduate from high school and go to a community college or someplace and try to attain that EMT, they got to pay about $4,000. So I say, well, why don't you just put it in the high school? Let's put it in the high school. That way, when the children come out of high school, they would have it. But guess what? They don't want to do that. Now the city school, I stay in the county, right outside the city, but city have done it, and it's working very well.
Mm-hmm.
But it needs to be, that type of education needs to be in all schools. But see, here's another thing. The superintendent says that the state is on them for not meeting AYP. The state is on them because they're provisional and not certified, not accredited, that is, and they got to teach the children to take the test. They don't have any time for something that's of substance.
Mm-hmm.
That's because they receive a lot of money from the state and also an exuberant amount of money from the federal government. Those two entities can direct you to tell you what you got to do.
No Child Left Behind program.
No Child Left Behind.
No Child Left Behind. Almost every child in our community is left behind.
With the school lunch programs, we used to have black teachers, not black teachers, but black cooks. And y'all know that, how they used to fix marvelous meal. I mean, the best meal of the day we would get at, we would be in the lunchroom.
At school. Mm-hmm.
Right. But because of the free lunch program, which is nothing more than a welfare to, you know, the farmers, white farmers, where they dictate what's on the menu.
So that's political as well. Break it?
Politics. Well, one thing we got, first you got to control your economy and your own community. And we don't do that because you got to come in and they open up stores and they taking that money out. The money is not circulating around where your child can even have access to it. You don't control that economy in your community, then you're really bad shit. Just like Amos Wilson. Amos Wilson was a prophet that came,
he really was.
Died.
Mm-hmm. Amos Wilson.
We got the blueprint. Do you have his book?
A regular
blueprint for Black Power.
Yes.
You know how much that book sells
Amos
for
Wilson
now.
Amos Wilson was a regular guest on Our Common Ground when we did Terrestrial Radio.
You know how much his book sells for now. You know how much his book sells for now. Blueprint for Black Power sells for $1,500 on Amazon, and you can't get them.
Really. I have a copy. I think I have two copies.
I probably got four copies. I got at least $6,000
yeah.
worth of books in here.
And for those of you who are listening, if you have not read or heard the work of Dr. Amos Wilson, we suggest that when you are thinking through the issues of black survival and black crisis, that he is a wonderful reference to help shape your thinking about these issues.
I think that black children, and this thing here about closing the gap is about as silly as you can possibly get. When Pat Riley huddled his team and they down 10 points with 2 minutes left in the game, do you think he's talking about closing the gap? That he's telling his team, let's win. So we need to get off these silly notions that we tell our children that no matter what we tell them, they still not as good as somebody else. We got to teach them to win. What they learn, the skills that they learn should give them the ability to go out on the world market scene and capture percentages of that market. This silly notion of telling children to go to school and get an education and go to college is also asinine. Go to college for what? Education has to be education for what? That's the question.
Yeah,
Indians
really
back in the late 40s. Indians back in the late 40s took large segments of their population and started training them for information technology. And look where they are today. Obama was in India begging them that the United States businesses can have access to their markets. Absolutely begging them.
Well,
so we have to give our children those power too.
And that particular case,
just like I've said countless times, you know, this president just went to a G20 summit meeting. And at that G20 summit meeting, 19 of those countries practiced a form of protectionism, and they protect their market. There's only one country that does not, and that's the United States. Our market is an open book.
And what else? And what do we not protect? The market on the world scene is no more different than our market on the neighborhood scene.
Well, when you start talking about protecting what's here in our neighborhood, you begin to go through the, you know, look at our resources. This is not to make an excuse. We have enough buying power, but the people who have to wield that power do not wield the same mindset or the same logic.
Well, someplace along the line, things have gotten completely out of whack.
Someplace along the line. I think it's been out of whack since the beginning.
No, it hasn't been this bad, because it got, I'd say in the 60s, things are a whole lot better as far as what we're talking about than it is now. But now things are so completely out of whack that you just get frustrated. I can hear it in your voice. I mean,
well,
you're not the only one to speak that. I mean, these conversations
yeah,
go on
yeah.
all the time. But we blame it. We can't blame that parent, because that parent that was turned 18 tomorrow but wasn't taught how to be a parent nor is civil, how to perform his civic duties, you really can't blame. That's society. That's black society's fault. You know, our children didn't have anything to build off of, because the generations before them didn't leave them with anything to build off of.
Well, it's not
so they go out and they create their own economy. That's a human trait. Human beings, just like any other creature, is going to try to do what it has to do to survive. Unfortunately, ours get involved in illicit activities, because that's all there is for them to do. They don't want to be that way. You know, black children go to school with just as much enthusiasm to learn as anybody else. Black parents know that they are inefficient, and they don't want their children to be that way.
I agree with you. I wholeheartedly agree with you. The question is, how do we begin to put that somehow in a structure within the community?
Well, we got to get back control of the money that we spend, for one thing, because they're not serving our purpose. I mean, we can open these schools, but these schools fail too often. We need to put pressure on the public schools, since our children are there. And you need to tell them that our children need something tangible. EMT, you got the urban farming, paramedics, those jobs that's in your community, those firefighters in your community ain't black. Those ambulance drivers are not black. They come in from all miles around to get those jobs. Well, you got to demand that these jobs that this district is serving, a 90% black population, then 90% of the jobs should be black.
Mm-hmm. I agree with you that you have absolute no argument, and that to me means that we have to reframe, redefine education in our communities. Bianca, I've really enjoyed hearing your thoughts, and one of the things that before I let you go, because we've got other callers, is a good example is the way in which our community has failed to support organizations like the United Black Front, the Black United Front. I have
been a
friend of Conrad Warrill's for years. He used to be another one of our regulars at Our Common Ground. And the fact that we would prefer to support peripheral organizations that are just dipping around with dinners and awards and you know, and I hate to say the NAACP, but I didn't say the NAACP.
Well, you got to say it because that's who they are. They are a vanguard organization. And,
exactly.
And that would be a whole different story. That would be a whole different show.
Exactly.
Anytime you got an organization that will champion you busting your children out of the community, it's stupid. It's silly.
Well, you see, the thing is that is why when Dr. Amos Wilson talks about consciousness, and consciousness is a built-in understanding, an intrinsic, natural, instinctive understanding of what history and culture mean in our lives.
Well, you know, the whole idea of consciousness, the whole idea of consciousness can be manipulated too, because they think that they're doing the right thing. You know, I know exactly where you're coming from by using that word consciousness, just like we use the word spirituality. But, you know, first of all, you would have a difficult time convincing black people in the present condition. See, it's easy you know the old saying that the grass is greener on the other side of the fence. Well, when they look over at the grass that you and I are standing on, this is just as brown as the one they're standing on, you're going to have a difficult time trying to convince them of what it is that you want them to do.
You're absolutely right. Bianca, I've got to go, but I respect you, my brother, and you keep working at it. Because
thank
I
you very
think
much.
Community academies. I think we need people out there who are willing to go the full mile to change what is happening in our public schools to black children, and that will, in fact, empower other children. Thank you so very much, and black power to you, brother, because we got a lot of work to do. 845, you're on the air. I respect you. You're with Janice and Alpha here at Our Common Ground. Thank you for joining us.
Hello, Janice and Alpha. This is Denise. How are you this evening?
Denise Bowles, thank you so much for your call.
Denise, how are you?
We do want to tell our audience that tomorrow afternoon at 4 p.m., Denise Bowles, who has joined us in this conversation, who has a blog talk radio show at blogtalkradio.com, Denise-Bowles, and I posted it in our chat room. And
yes,
you can come to Blog Talk Radio and do a search. But she's going to have with her a conversation tomorrow with Michelle Alexander, who is the author of The New Jim Crow. And that's going to be very exciting, discussing the prison system and what it means to us. Denise, what's on your mind tonight?
Well, I've been listening to your show, and I just have to say Our Common Ground is one of my favorite shows on Blog Talk Radio because you keep me thinking. You keep me on my toes, and tonight's show is no exception as far as how do we save ourselves. And, you know, when we talk about education, I was completely outraged this week by the studies, another study reported by the New York Times again.
Exactly.
About
how many
about
studies
how,
do we need?
Right, about how our black children are doing so badly. You know, if I'm well in my 40s. I've been looking at professional journals forever. If I can count how many studies have been done, if we can take all those monies and put them into the education system for what the education system is supposed to do, we'll see a difference. We don't need another study. We know what's broken. We know what's bad. We know what's not.
I look at the people who headed up this study. Ron Ferguson is a very good friend of mine. He's the director of the Achievement Gap Initiative at Harvard. That is his job.
Okay.
And we need to move beyond. We need to move to prioritizing how you eliminate the barriers, the impediments. And we also need to start talking about how culture, race, intersects in education.
I've always said, Janice, that education is still separate and still unequal. I don't care how, you know, we've had laws come in to bus our kids and bring about equality in education. There's never been that equality in the classroom. And we've got many, many black children, myself included, to attest to that fact and say, yeah, you might get the same textbook, but you're not getting the same education. You're just not, because the congruency level of the people administering the teaching is different, as well as the fact the attitude of education in America is something that we have to address. And I wrote an article about it. I still have to post it on my blog. I wrote an article called The Attitude of Education. And why is it that parents seem to think that if they drop their children off to school, they will become educated? Why is it that people who own property are resistant to pay school tax because they don't have children in the school district? Education is an investment that everyone has to partake in. Everyone. Because we all win. Everyone is benefiting off of that doctor's education when he does surgery. Everyone is benefiting off of Bill Gates' education when he built the computer and did what he did with Microsoft. You know what I mean? But at the
to Pianki's point, Bill Gates does not have a college degree.
No. But
he built Microsoft because he was a gamer.
Right. But what happens with the education system, we've turned it into a business, okay? And you will not see the education system fixed the way we would like it to be fixed, because our black boys are funding a huge monstrosity called the education business. It's very lucrative to assign a black boy into special ed at $7,500 to $10,000 a pop per year for that school district per child, okay, to be designated into special ed. Predominantly black boys are assigned this. And I can guarantee you, 90% of the black children don't belong in special ed, but they're assigned there because it's a business. It's a business.
Mm-hmm.
And we won't change the way education is delivered because the model is so damn lucrative now. And when you see teachers get tenure, teachers have unions to protect them, and there's no union to protect the student in school. There's no union to protect the parent. The education system is modeled to satisfy adults. It is not modeled to teach children.
Well, you know, one of the things, let's go back to that part of the discussion we just had with Pianki. It is about economics as well. If we are to transform how our children are educated, what they're educated for, and reframe our definition of education and educational expectation, it is going to take money. Now, all of us, I mean, I know that some of you all are watching the fight while this is going on. I know many of you are subscribers to Comcast and all the other things so you can get your cable. Their internet, every one of you has an internet service provider. Every one of you has gone to a Celtics game or a Heat game or whoever game. We keep allowing a small group of black people in this country to have a huge economy for which they feel, and I'm talking about athletes and celebrities, I'm talking about business people who are heads of corporations who are not contributing to the right solutions because the right solutions don't make sense for them. And that's your point, Denise.
Yes.
That educating black children in America is not happening in the way that it should happen, because there is no return on it in the minds of the people in government, in the minds of the people who have money. You see, Shaquille O'Neal wouldn't ever be able to get a smile out of me, or LeBron, whatever his name is. Name some people, Alpho. These people wouldn't... Tyler Perry would never be, Oprah would never be able to get a smile out of me, because they have the capacity to do, all of us should stand up and put our backs to the TV of Oprah Winfrey, because she has the capacity to support the real solutions and the right solutions, and she does not.
If Oprah got up there and said to her show, "I'm dedicating a show to education, not the Waiting for Superman movie. No, not that. I'm telling parents to get up and get home and read to their children. I'm telling parents to get involved in PTA. I'm telling parents to make a parental presence." If our black churches, if the leaders of the church said, "Hey, you don't have to be here in church 24/7, okay? I want you to dedicate your time to your children and see them as the investment that they are." If we had that kind of message going out, you will see a change. But everybody's got their own agenda.
If Shaquille O'Neal and LeBron James and somebody else and Tyler Perry sponsored a nationwide reading program for boys, where just like if Oprah has her book club, and they had some kind of mechanism by which they would talk about the books on the radio or whatever, and the rap music, I don't care. I'm sick of these hip hop, Jay-Z and Beyonce and Rihanna and all these people. I have had it with them.
We have to at least put the book in the kids' hands. We don't have to have them get on national TV and talk about them. Make the books accessible to a child. If you go to Barnes & Noble, if you go to a bookstore now, do you know how much it costs to buy a child a book?
It's no, but expensive. I know how much it costs to buy groceries.
It's very expensive. Scholastic Book Club is still expensive. It's very rare to get a book now under $5. It's very rare.
Mm-hmm. You know,
so we
and
have to put
and
books in the children's hands.
Yep. And if we would reject, if we would be vocal, if Oprah would be vocal about what P.D. Jakes and Eddie Long and all those people have done with black people's money,
amen,
as opposed to doing the right thing, some things would change, Denise.
It would definitely
change.
Absolutely.
If Oprah, and I don't want to be picking on Oprah, but you know she's a real thorn in my craw. If Oprah, for instance, voiced, if she said, "Okay, NAACP Legal Defense Fund, Urban League, all y'all ain't getting nothing done. Urban League does nothing but do a study every year, and that's all they do. This is what needs to happen. We need to have academies." You know, I keep talking about this, and I will continue to talk about it. We need to have in our urban areas African-centered boarding schools for boys and girls who are not getting the parenting that they need. The constant truancy, the constant delinquent behavior in schools. All of those kids need to be remanded.
Janice, do you know what other cultures have? Other cultures have schools for their children to go to learn about their culture. Chinese children go to Chinese school so they can learn how to speak the language and
exactly.
Learn about their norms and cultures.
Jewish kids go to Hebrew school.
Same thing. What do black children have? They've got BET, and they've got all these other magazines out there telling them about blackness, which is very Eurocentric, hair permed, pants hanging off your ass. That's what our children have. Our children don't have it to teach us black culture, except for February, when it's Black History Month, and all you see on all the public school windows is one picture of Martin Luther King Jr., and that's our black children's scope of history, and that's the fact that we were slaves. That's all our black children know. But to put it like you said, a local center in every community of a black center where our black children go to learn about their blackness and their black history, and what, as Al folks said earlier, what is expected of them? What is expected? If you go out right now with a microphone,
and we did that in the 60s. We had street academies. Black Panther Party in most major cities across this country had academies for black children.
Yes.
To get a sense. You know, but I'm not going to sit here and dog down black children because this is an adult problem.
This is a problem for people who
have the understanding, who have the knowledge.
Absolutely. And the parents need to fight for in schools, and what I always educate and try to tell parents about, college is not for everyone. We have to bring back the entity of vocational schools, schools that teach children carpentry, electric, all the other skills that are still very needed in the community and that still is very honorable, very good pay. But all of a sudden, those vocational skills have been replaced in schools by proficiency prep. You know, we have to prep the kids to take the proficiency exam. And we're not teaching our children that there's another alternative skill that they can learn that is still very respected in the community and still can make them gainfully employed.
But then, you know, we were talking earlier about political power. We need political power in order to move some of these ideas and solutions. And we don't give to politicians, people who are running for elected office in our local area, we don't give $5, $10. We just don't do it.
Well, you know, Alpha brought up a very good point earlier. And what he said was, if the change has to start with policy, we have to have policy. If you really think long and hard, which you really won't have to, just who is our black leaders in our community today? Obama is not the answer. Who is it? Who are the black people prepping to be their next leader? Who's the next Democratic leader? Who's the next governor of New York who's black? Where are our leaders? We don't see them.
Well,
we don't
the thing
have
is, we have black people sitting on school boards who are going along to get along. We have black people who are sitting they grab a Negro. I call it a grab a Negro. They grab a Negro, put them on boards that make decisions, and the decisions are not in our best interest.
No, because it's perfunctory just to shut us up. Oh, look, we have diversity. We have diversity. See, you can't call us biased. We have diversity. See. And that's supposed to shut us up. But, you know, we have people here
in the city of Boston who have been on the Boston City Council for 1,000 years. And nothing different has happened in regard to the outcome for black children, for black people in this city.
There you go.
And where we need to begin, and I will keep saying it over and over, the way we save ourselves and our children, we save them at the local area. If black people rose up and said something has to be changed, it has to be transformed. We have to have centers for parents to learn how to be parents. We have to have literacy centers for parents who can't read so that they can teach their children before they hit kindergarten how to read, how to count the virtues and the positive and the importance of teaching little children to count before they go. Anybody can do that.
That's right.
All you have to do is sing the ABC song.
But, you know, as I said earlier, and I will continue.
And please wait a minute, Denise, I have to say this. Please don't teach your toddlers how to sing One Little, Two Little Indians. That's not the way you teach it, because that's counterproductive.
You know, But there is profit in dysfunction. There is profit in keeping our black people uneducated, unmotivated, mm-hmm. and incarcerated. There is profit.
That is a truism. How do we change it, Denise? That is
policy.
A truism.
We have to have policy. We have to turn around as black people and say, look, I've been in this Senate seat for umpteen years. I'm going to pass it on now to someone else. We have to start grooming our next predecessors. We have to start grooming the next people to pass the baton to. But we don't want to do that. We want to hold all the glory. We want to hold it all till it drops dead. And then we look around and say, oh, look, it's dead. What do we do now? That's it. But, if we take a look at the other ethnicities and the other cultures, the Jews were considered the dogs of the universe. They killed Jesus. Hitler called them everything. These people were persecuted beyond persecution. They came back, and they dominate us now. They control our airways. They control what we watch on TV. They control what we eat. They control
mm-hmm.
everything.
Mm-hmm.
But they kept their culture. They kept their tradition. They kept their ethno pride intact. They're proud to be Jews. They marry their own. They stay amongst themselves. They're unified. And they're very, very successful. We have to model after the success that's around us. But we have to get away from Housewives of Atlanta. We have to get away from the Korean nail tip salon and the hair weave salon. We have to stop being so distracted.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
We have to see that policy is the way to change something. It's the way that the system of works and respects. If we start demanding change for policy, watch how many people's attention we would get.
Well, you are absolutely right, Denise. And, as far as this discussion can take us, I will continue to say this. We people of conscience, we are the people who are speaking about what needs to be done. But the people who need to take those steps aren't listening. And our message is somehow not getting there. We speak about the people who have achieved through sports, or some other vehicle they've taken, whatever vehicle they've taken to monetary riches. And for them to want to reach back and pull their community with them, it's just not in them. We
yeah.
have been, for the longest, the most scarred culture, the most scarred race, and it just seems to... How long will we wander in this wilderness of separation, of the inability to bring ourselves to a point where those who achieve will reach back and drag those who haven't along with them? And you speak about Oprah Winfrey. She put money into an African school rather than putting that money into a school here in the United States, or even better, put the money in both of them. And you have people who are making millions, but the wealth that it will take to sustain that is doable with the money that the elite blacks, or the blacks who have taken that vehicle and made their way. How much money can you spend? How much
yeah.
money will it take? And that's where our shortfall is. We do not have enough. Look at Michael Jordan. Michael Jordan was never one on politics. He ran from it. He never had an opinion about a political issue. And once we've gotten athletes who were the main money makers, the richest, and the actors. Once you get, look at what Bill Cosby did. He came out, he had legitimate criticism, and they attacked him on all fronts. His own people attacked him on all fronts.
Yes. Well, don't even get started on that Bill Cosby thing, because it was so flawed in the way he presented it. Denise, I've got to take a break, and I'd like to ask you to hold go over with us.
All righty.
Can I ask you that?
Okay. You're listening to Our Common Ground at Blog Talk Radio. I'm Janice Graham, and my co-host tonight is Alpho of the Alpho Show. Thank you all for being with us. Our number is 347-838-9852. We'll be right back.
You know that the ice cream scoop can make a child smile, and that by slowing us down, the traffic light can keep us going. You know that the lawnmower makes life easier, that the blood bank makes life possible. But did you know all these ideas came from the minds of African Americans? Support the United Negro College Fund, because a mind is a terrible thing to waste. Visit uncf.org or call 1-800-332-UNCF. Brought to you by UNCF and the Ad Council.
This is Our Common Ground at Blog Talk Radio, speaking truth to power and ourselves.
You've been had. You've been took. You've been hoodwinked. Bamboozled. Led astray. Run on.
You know, what this whole thing is about is delegitimizing the presidency of Barack Obama. It's the same with the birther movement, and it's the same with the teabaggers. They can't accept, much tolerate, the fact that a Democrat, and a black one at that, won the presidency. So they're intent on doing whatever they can to tear this presidency down. This is what Obama's up against, and the sooner he realizes it, the better.
Once again, thank you for being with us. Denise held over for us during our break. Denise, one of the things that we do have to get to is that we're not only having a social, we're not only having an educational, in the midst of an educational crisis, we're not only in the midst of an economic crisis. In our community, we are in the midst of a social crisis. We saw last week, statistics about the high numbers still of African American girls who are pregnant, one, before they are an adult, and two, without benefit of the kind of support system that they need in order to protect and bring safely with confidence children to a place of success and achievement. What's your thought about that?
Well, you know, once again, it's a profitable business to keep our black girls pregnant because someone is making money off that teen pregnancy. And if you ever have been in the system of welfare, you will know exactly who is making the money. And it's not the black person who's the client. It is the people who are sitting on the other side of the desk and the people you don't see. Now, for once again, it does come back, though, to education, because how many of our young people are taught the exact biology of what it takes to even have a baby? All we know about what we see about having a baby is we get the baby shower, we get all the cute clothes, you get all kinds of attention when you're pregnant, people want to just tell you all kinds of anecdotes and give you all kinds of advice, and that's all we know. Then you look at the baby channel here, the learning channel, when they have the shows about the high-risk deliveries, and they show you the doctors come in and they do all this high-tech stuff and they get that baby out. They don't show you after the cameras are gone, after the baby shower is over. No one tells that teen mom that it's going to take on the average $250,000 to raise that kid to get him to school. And then another $150,000 to even get him where he needs to go to be an adult. No one tells you how expensive it is to raise a child. No one tells you a male child learns differently than a girl child. None of these education parameters are given. So girls think, hey, I get all this attention to have a baby. Let me have the baby. No one tells these girls that prenatal care is very important and that prematurity is the number one killer for African-American babies who don't live to be a year old. Our babies have a very high mortality rate here in the United States. Black children have a very high mortality rate in the United States. And our young girls are not told about the respiratory distress, the lack of full brain development, the blindness, the special ed, the retardation. They're not told all those things about what happens with premature deliveries. They're not told any of this. They're just given the very glamorized, overprocessed thing about having a baby. I'm grown. I can have a baby. And they go ahead and do that because someone else is going to be profiting off of them. Simple as that. Once we start teaching our kids what the game is really about, they'll wake up, I don't want anyone profiting off of me. I don't have television in my home. There's certain things I just don't endorse and don't buy into because I'm not going to be your profit margin. I'm not. And we have to empower people to make those right decisions so that they will understand, I'm not going to be part of this game. And that's what parents need to understand about the education process. This is what teens need to understand about sex. This is what our black boys need to understand about holding a gun. All of these things. But we are just distracted by the glamorizing of the media. It looks cool to hold a gun. The cop shows look great. You know, the television is telling us exactly how great things look. But the reality is completely different for the black man and the black woman. And that's where we have to wake up. We have to wake up and we have to pull up and say, hey, I'm not your profit margin anymore.
Well, I think the thing is that the level of tolerance of the crisis is so disturbing. The level of the extent to which we on a daily basis look at black politics, the black economy, the black social crisis, the lack of, I keep saying it, community education. It's not just good enough to think of education in terms of children. We have to think of education in terms of adults because
Absolutely.
Only educated adults will get jobs.
Absolutely.
Denise, thank you so much for joining us, and I want to once again recommend Denise Bowles' Blog Talk Radio show tomorrow afternoon at 4 p.m., with Michelle Alexander, the author of The New Jim Crow, looking at the new American prison industrial complex. Denise, thanks again for being with us. Our number is 347-838-9852, and we'd like to hear from you. Tonight we're talking about how many studies does it take to prove that there is a crisis? How do we save ourselves from ourselves? And what are the priorities? You know, we're talking about how we transform the very infrastructure in which we live. And I'd like to offer something to you. Here are the voices of our children crying out.
Epidemic of kids killing kids.
Raphael Johnson, 17, Baker High School. died November 9th, 2006. Craig McComb, 19.
Will they ever call your death beautiful? Your life a sacrifice? Will the meeting of blood and bullet ever be called romantic? A love story to be jealous of?
Christian Lamont.
Chris, I remember you in Guatemalan green matching your flag on your Independence Day. Your hair was a black puff of curl and confidence. In homeroom, you always had homies in the hallway waiting for you. We're still waiting. I couldn't sleep for a week when you washed up waterlogged in the Calumet River. Puffed and purple like violets before bloom.
Eduardo Pena.
Eddie, you were the first to say hi to me. First day of school when I stepped in with Bugle Boy jeans and a high top fade and I saw you. Possibly the coolest dude to ever grace elementary. September 22nd, 2006, 8th period. We really need to hang out. Yeah, that'll be cool. I'll see you later, D. September 22nd, 2006, 8:30 p.m., maybe a little later than I thought, when your path ended on Vincent's Road, run down by bad luck and a police officer. Lives like these shouldn't be shortened. Sentence fragments of a future. And in the 14 days it took us to write this, we've had to add more names to this list. Because in this city, before we blossom, we must weather storms unforecast, because every intersection can become Virginia Tech. So excuse me if the news be missing my emotions. See, being brown in Bigger Thomas' town makes you endangered. And in the past 2 years, I've seen over 60 Native sons set in the grave. I guess this is the part where poets produce plans and we don't have any. In Chicago, anyone under age 20 is a target. And I don't know how to do more than be afraid that an age allowing me to be on this stage might have me murdered by Monday. I'm 18. I play pickup basketball games with ghosts. Is there a reason I'm making it out of a community that has martyred young men I might be mistaken for? I...
Christian Lamont.
Don't...
Eduardo Pena.
No... Will they ever call your death beautiful? Your life a sacrifice? A love story to be jealous of? How many deaths will it take before this is considered genocide?
Our children can't hear the truth at school if a person says fuck. Can't even talk about fuck even though a third of their senior class is pregnant. I can't teach an 18-year-old girl in a public school how to use a condom that will save her life and that of the orphan she'll be forced to give to the foster care system. Carlos, how many 13-year-olds do you know that are HIV positive? Honestly, none. But I do visit a shelter every Monday and talk with six 12-year-old girls with diagnosed AIDS, while fourth graders three blocks away give little boys blowjobs during recess, and an 11-year-old gang member in the South Bronx who carries a semi-automatic weapon to study hall so we can make it home. And you want me to censor my language, Carlos? What's genocide? You wonder why children hide in adult bodies, lie under light-color-eyed contact lenses, learn to fetishize the size of their ass, and simultaneously hate their lips. My students thought Che Guevara was a rapper from East Harlem. Still think my Mumia t-shirt is of Bob Marley. How can literacy not include Phyllis Wheatley? Schools were built in the shadows of ghosts, filtered through incest and grinding teeth, molded under veils of extravagant ritual. Carlos, was genocide? Rosaline, how old was she? ¿Cuántos años tuvo tu madre cuando se murió? My mother had 32 years when she died. Ella era bellísima. What's genocide? They've moved on from sterilizing Boricua women, injecting indigenous sisters with hepatitis B. Now they just kill mothers with silent poison, stain their loyalty and love in their veins, and suffocate them. What's genocide? Ridwan's father hung himself in the box because he thought his son was ashamed of him. What's genocide? Maureen's mother gave her skin lightening cream the day before she started the sixth grade. What's genocide? She carved straight lines into her beautiful brown thigh so she could remember what it feels like to heal. What's genocide? What's genocide? Carlos, what's genocide, Luz? This right here is genocide.
You must be able to get the guts as the intellectuals of the black society to say, we are black, our noses are broad, our lips are thick, our hair is nappy, and we are beautiful! And we are beautiful! And we are beautiful!
This is Our Common Ground. I'm Janice Graham, speaking truth to power and ourselves at Our Common Ground, transforming truth to power, one broadcast at a time. Thank you for being with us tonight. Saturday night open mic. Thank you for joining us tonight.
Bianchi, who's in our chat room. Della Proza is with us in the Voxor. Stephen C. and Smooth Operator Steins and Doc Don. And it's Saturday night open mic at Our Common Ground. We're talking about the black crisis, all of the black crises, and what are the answers. You know, Alpha, I was reminded about a quote from Bell Hooks when she said that her hopes emerged from a places of struggle where she witnessed individuals positively transforming their lives and the world around them. And she said, education or educating is always a vocation rooted in hopefulness. And as a teacher, she believed that learning is possible, that nothing can keep an open mind from seeking after knowledge and finding a way to know. And I think we have to keep that in mind. In our chat room, there is a big discussion going on where I think that, Leroy, our number is 347-838-9852. An old debate has been around how the impediments of establishing an economic infrastructure within the black community. And there are so many things that really impede our progress in that regard. Alpha, how are you feeling?
Well, I want to thank Denise for her input because, you know, we all approach this, you know, with the open minds. We all have our opinions, and we all have our, we come to our own conclusions, and we draw our own conclusions. And it's really refreshing when you can actually hear some of your conclusions are being reflected back to you by, you know, someone you have not collaborated with, and it's refreshing to see that people can see things as you see them, or can understand that this is not rocket science. But what we are lacking is the real ability to get a unified message, or
mm-hmm.
It's not so much that the message isn't going out. The message is in such, to use a metaphor, it's in such a whisper that it's silent, because the people that need to get this message have been so, I would have to say, indoctrinated, that they're not going to get the message because they're just not that into us.
Mm-hmm.
They are just
mm-hmm.
not,
mm-hmm.
you know, open to the message itself.
You know, one of the things that we were talking at the end of the conversation with Denise about is are the crises we face in our socialization in our community. It seems as though we have lost so much of a collective value system, and that speaks to culture. That speaks to it speaks to the idea that our sense of who we are and what our civic and social responsibilities are to each other is fading. And in our discussion with Pianki, one of the things that we talked about was why we support the organizations, the causes that we support. You know, black folks love to jump up talking about how so many black men are going to prison and what percentage of the prison population is, you know, young black people. But at the same time, we don't support the organizations that work on the issues of justice and fairness in regard to our judiciary, which is why our children have no faith that we care about these things. We live in communities where law enforcement continues to repress and oppress black teenagers, male and female, where law enforcement officers participate in the kind of terrorism that we fight in Iraq and Afghanistan and Pakistan and wherever we go, but we are not supporting the organizations that are protesting against police brutality in our own community. We tolerate so much stuff, Alpha, that it is beyond my comprehension. As my mother would say, my 85-year-old mother would say, what have we become? And Pianki spoke to it a little bit, and that is that we had a destructive force with a stigmatism. We had blurred vision going in and out of the civil rights era. And Malcolm spoke to it too, that we were so busy that our priority, that our agenda item was being like people who had clearly demonstrated we didn't want to be like.
Well, Janice, I was responding to the back and forth in our chat room, and
I know. And let me say something else, Alpha, while I'm on this. Denise, you know, in regard to children having children, there was a time in our community that we had a value system which labeled teen sex and teen pregnancy as a taboo. And Denise can speak to this, or someone can speak to this. But now it's like, if I'm 14 years, 15 years old, and I'm pregnant, everybody gives me a baby shower. And I'm, you know, and we do have some conflict over that. We're not teaching our children sexual responsibility, and we're not teaching them social responsibility in regard to their sexuality. Not even talk about the health issues related to that.
Well, Dennis, really?
You remember Alpha, when I was in high school, if you got pregnant, you simply couldn't go to church. You couldn't go to school. You were isolated. I'm not saying it was right, the way in which it was done, but you were isolated from the other girls. Their mothers protected them from someone who had been irresponsible.
Well, Dennis,
you remember that?
Let me put it like this. Let me bring my baggage in with me. My oldest son is 42. Okay? He was born when I was 15. And my youngest son is 40. So did I learn my lesson? Not quite. So when we begin to speak about this, you know, and as even in high school, I went to school, I played sports, which means I was going to practice, then I got my butt out of there and I went to work from 6 to 1 in the morning. So when you get right down to it, you're going to have the, no parent is, there are very few parents that are talking about responsibility with their children, about sex, about any of that. And that's, I mean, that might come to a, you know, to our shortcomings. But at some point, the people who are affected are not listening. They are not listening to what we know, what I know in my older years. I struggled. Hell, I've lived in my home for 36 years. So, I mean, I was out to do the right thing by my family. And I did. So I'm just simply saying that the people aren't, the people who need to be listening aren't listening. We are the ones, we are the sage ones. And it is up to us to carry this message. And I'll, you know, just on a personal point, my son has a young lady that he's been seeing for a while, and this young lady has a daughter. And she's very young. And she keeps having these kids, and I can't get through to her that it's a vagina, not a clown car. And I mean, I even go that far to use that metaphor with them to give them some type of humor. What are you doing? You've seen your mother struggle. Now you bring on the struggle. And it's just, it mimics what our youth do. Our youth mimic what they see.
Because the message is, it's just like the political messaging that we see between the Republicans versus the Democrats. It's because the message is only coming from one place.
Well.
And that's coming from you.
Well, let me put it like this. At some point, you have to not give a damn where the message is coming or how many places it's coming from. It's that you have to get the message. And I guess this young lady, she's had a third child, and all three of her children are beautiful. They're beautiful. They come to my house, and they're all over me. And every time they come to my house, and I'm playing with them, and I'm interacting with them, I look over at their mother when they're in another room, and I tell her, "Don't you have no more damn kids here?" And I tell her just like that. And every time I see her, I ask her, "You pregnant?" Because I can't get it over. I can't get it through her head. I can't get it through to her to stop this. You are not.
That's because she lives in a circle that where it is acceptable. So you saying it's not acceptable is not enough. So my question is, how do we save ourselves from ourselves?
Well, at some point, someone has to grab a megaphone.
I mean, think about it. You can go on any public transportation system throughout this country and find the most despicable, open, loud conversations among not only teenagers, but adults. I mean, I sit on the train and I want to just get a bucket and collect all the cell phones where people can't sit. I mean, we have people in our society who cannot sit without talking. So they're constantly calling. I observed a woman the other day. She went from one phone call to the next phone call to the next phone call for 20 minutes on the train because she couldn't stand to be with herself.
Well, what did we do when we didn't have cell phones? We didn't have cell phones
growing
up. That's
what I want to know. We've got about less than 10 minutes, and our number is 347-838-9852. You're listening to Our Common Ground. We're talking about political, economic, educational, social crisis in our community and what we must do. We've got a caller at 303. 303, you're on the air. I respect you. Thank you for joining us at Our Common Ground tonight.
And I respect you, Janice. This is 303 Colorado calling.
Thank you very much. Yes.
Oh. I don't know what it's gonna take. You think about the 60s and what spurred the movement back then was a combination of young, fired up people and the music. You know, you had James Brown. And
is this Stephen C?
Yes.
Oh, it's so good to talk to you.
I know, I'm saying.
Okay, I didn't recognize your new area code.
I know.
Well, you didn't give your name either, Stephen. I knew it was you, but you didn't give your name.
Oh, I'm sorry. I just thought when I said Colorado that Janice would realize.
You said Colorado, I think of Ken Buck, okay?
Well, at least there are more people that are not in that category than back in Georgia. That's all I can say. I mean, it's just getting crazy out there. I mean, for everybody. So of course it's even crazier in the black community because, you know, I mean, people that. You know, I mean, I know people that are getting foreclosed on their $500,000 houses and stuff, you know, and
mm-hmm.
they're just shaking their heads going, I wonder why, and then they're listening to Glenn Beck. You know, I mean, it's like people are just going crazy. I just really think that two main things are, you know, your boss, Holder, what the hell is he waiting for? It's been 2 years, you know, and people are still being thrown in prison you know, for nickel and dime dealing on the streets, and it's not anybody white, you know, and at the same time, you know, where's the music heading? I mean, you probably saw that documentary about the civil rights movement where everybody from Martin to Andy Young and everybody was saying how important the music was to the movement, that it helped, you know, inspire them and it helped get them through times, you know, that were bad. But today, the music isn't doing anything positive, you know.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
It's just like we're just inundated on all fronts, and you know it's I'm feeling like somebody who's playing chess and just got checkmated. You know, they got the Supreme
yeah.
Court, they've got the media, they've got Congress. You know, what's left? You know, the only thing left is from the bottom up, and you know,
mm-hmm.
and people are still
the Glenn Becks, you know, and the bottom feeders, the
yeah.
racial. And
well, they're just
evil,
brainwashing
hateful
everybody.
Bottom feeders.
Yeah, yeah. I
like
mean, you know, Tom Hartman was saying that Glenn Beck's, you know, has for a week and a half has been on this tirade against George Soros, and he said that he's using the exact same terms that Hitler was using against the Jews in 1930s Germany. You know, the
mm-hmm.
same language, you know, to vilify the enemy, and the enemy are what? The Democrats? Liberals? You know, it's like we're going to fight the Civil War all over again.
Well, exactly.
Yeah.
And that's why I have a problem when you hear people talking, draw these false equivalencies as to
right.
both sides. We know that both sides are evil to a point.
Yeah, right.
We know that both sides, I will say, are no good to a point.
Right.
But there's one side that is simply pure evil.
Right.
There's one side that will inject the Southern strategy and will use the cultural divides and the class warfare and the racism. You know, it's not a tough call when you hear people like Rush Limbaugh, Glenn Beck.
Right.
All of these people are racial arsonists. And they should be described.
And they lie.
Right. They
flat
should
out,
be described
they just lie.
As such. You know, racial arsonists should be in front of Beck's name, Limbaugh's name, Pat Buchanan's name, all of their names, O'Reilly, mm-hmm. Hannity, because that's what they are.
Exactly.
Well, there's another point that I really want to amplify tonight. And that is, despite the Glenn Becks, despite the Rush Limbaughs, despite the John Boehner, despite the Eric Cantors, there is another point, and that is, what are we doing? What is Morial doing? What is Jealous doing? What are the people over at the NAACP Legal Defense
yeah.
doing? What's the Lawyers Committee doing? And where are they placing their energy?
Well,
there is
I've been
no
asking that for 30
why.
Years.
There's no reason why that
yeah.
the Justice Department shouldn't be inundated
yep.
with suits
yep.
to address police brutality in this country, to address inadequate counsel in courts, to
right.
address the manipulation of the judicial system and the judges in Mississippi, Alabama, Tennessee, California, Colorado, Texas. But what they're doing is they're spending their energy, and it is our political, our economic, and our educational capital on the same agenda that the government is on. And that is outrageous and should not be tolerated. Hey, Stephen C., I've got to wrap up here.
Okay.
But it's good
All
to
right.
hear
Great
from
show,
you.
Gina.
I miss you.
Great
yeah,
to hear from you,
Thank
Stephen.
You.
Great to hear from you.
Boy, we've got some of the old timers really coming out of the woodwork. Stephen C. from our old U.S. Talk Network days, one of the regulars. You know, but the thing is that we are not demanding. If my neighbors wanted me to stop putting things on my garage roof or whatever, they would organize to make sure that it would happen. We are not organizing in a way that is effective. We are not holding the Black Caucus. We're not holding the NAACP, the Urban League, where our churches, our community centers. We've got community centers where governments on a local level are spending millions of dollars for ineffective bullshit. Also, thank you once again for being with us tonight at Our Common Ground. I really do enjoy having you pitch from a different angle. You always pitch from a different angle for me because you're always, your brain is always in the political part of it. But I'm encouraging people to really be conscious of our responsibilities. And if we prioritize our responsibilities, we may get something done. There is no reason why we don't have educational academies in our communities, which if they're not full-time charter schools, it should be after-school charter schools. Alpha, thank you again for all of you who've been listening and with us tonight. Thank you so very much. We're here each Saturday night, 10 p.m., on Our Common Ground, where we speak truth to power and ourselves.
Thank you, Dennis. Thank you.
These words are being written and spoken because my heart and soul feel broken. I laugh to keep from crying, but I still haven't healed after all of my years of my goofiness and joking. You got me open, hoping this ill feeling will pass, won't last. I wear a mask, and my peace won't ask for the truth. Truthfully speaking, the truth hurts, but I'm beyond hurting. I'm in pain. When I was a shorty, I thought she left because I wouldn't behave. Later on in life, I found out that it was the cane as well as other things. And with all the scars, it was hard, but I learned to forgive and forgave. I forgave you despite the fights and tears for all the years lost, wondering if I was loved. Sometimes all I needed was a call and a hug. I mean, I understand that people break up and don't make up and some relationships don't last forever, but why weren't we together? Ma could have found a new man, but why was I going to find a new dad? Looking back, I wish would have begged me, been pleading my case, because I felt like I didn't matter, like I was deleted and erased. I would cry, still cry so much that I get headaches. I try to get you off my mind, but I can't get you off of my face. I see you every time I see me, and I can't do nothing but ask God to bless me, because my love was amputated, my life was complicated, my family became dysfunctional. Dad, I remember when you pushed Ma, she broke her ankle, and I was sitting there thinking, how could you do this to such a beautiful angel? I remember Ma waking us up in the middle of the night, said, shh, Jimmy, put some clothes in the jewels bag. We're going to Grandma's, and if your father come up to your school, don't tell him where we'd be. I remember spending Christmas at Grandma's playing with my stretched arms, so I'm thinking, man, this ain't my house. How does Santa Claus find me? When the little boy in me still wants his daddy badly, I feel like a scared little boy afraid to become a man, but I think I'm ready. I wonder if you know that the baby boy in the show that aired for millions of C or HBO and that hard-ass New York crowd that I didn't even know actually gave me a standing no. I wonder if you know. I know you're proud because I'm be the best just like you want to be. Watch and see. And just in case you can't, I'm screaming so loud that I shake the clouds and move them out the way of my sunshine, because that's what you are, Dad. James Ivy Richardson Sr., do you hear me? You are my sunshine. That's why I forgave you, because my love for you is still the same. It may have gone through a transformation, but it never really changed. So I swear, on my mama and on my name, I'm going to stop this rain, conquer this pain, make sure that you do not die in vain. And when I get to heaven, I'm going to jump in your arms. We're going to kick back like when I was little and watch the Bears game.
Our Common Ground. Blog Talk Radio. I'm Janice Grant.
Thank you for joining us here at Our Common Ground tonight. We speak through the voices, through the lenses of Black children across this nation. Who will be their voice? Who will be their leader? And where will they stand?
Good night.